From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. In 2016, my next guest had written a powerful book exposing how Black girls were criminalized and pushed out of the school system. In her book, Push Out, Monique Morris explained how Black girls are criminalized starting in the classroom, and how the disrespect and marginalization they face can impact their entire lives. Now, in an anticipated follow-up to that work, Morris has a new book out called Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues, Education for the Liberation of Black and Brown Girls. In it, she explores the ways in which our educational system can best meet the needs of Black and Brown girls and help them and everyone else thrive through safety and justice instead of punishment and trauma. Monique Morris is co-founder of the National Black Women's Justice Institute, a 2012 Soros Justice Fellow, former Vice President for Economic Programs, Advocacy and Research at the NAACP. Her earlier books include Black Stats, African Americans by the Numbers in the 21st Century. Welcome back to the show, Monique.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on again.
So I suppose this was a natural follow-up to Push Out, where you identified the problem and its impact on young lives, to now where you are exploring the solution to that problem. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. The Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues really sort of follows me on the journey in having conversations about school push out and Black girls and increasingly brown girls on the road, which is why I anchor the conversation about solutions in the traditions of blues women who were also on the road a lot, exploring their truths in communities around the country.
So the work that was the basis of your book, I understand, was based in actual studying your direct contact with various programs that have worked. Can you give us a sense of the research that you did to write this book?
Yes, the book, the new book is really based upon a series of experiences and interactions that I've had with programs that have taken on the push out issue directly, that have explored opportunities for interventions, that have really taken up the challenge of trying to determine how we best respond to the conditions negatively impacting Black and brown girls in the United States. And so my approach was relatively organic in the sense that I was on book tour for about 3 years. I think most people take a book tour for a couple of months, but given how closely aligned this work was to the work of the National Black Women's Justice Institute, which I run, I found myself on the road a lot more, having deep level conversations, engaging in some professional development trainings, but also having the opportunity to explore research and more deeply understand how research was being applied to practice in classrooms around the country. And that's what I use as the basis for the discussions in Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues.
Now, our educational system, like so many other institutions in the United States, has presented ideas and has essentially been showcased through a white cultural lens, and that is based on the history of the origin of this country. Do you see and did you write your book through this lens of Black cultural historical framework, such as the blues, in order to reframe that narrative in a way that makes sense for non-white communities and specifically Black communities?
What I tried to do was draw upon the lessons of ancestors and elders in a musical tradition that sort of organically demonstrates the power of healing where we may not seek to find it. One of the core arguments that I've made along the way, both in Push Out and in Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues, is that our educational systems have become structures of punishment for many young people and for a disproportionately high level of Black and brown children. And so with the intention, the goal is to turn these institutions back into what they could always have been, which is institutions for healing so that they can actualize and realize their potential to be places and locations for learning. The anchoring of this narrative in the blues really sort of emerged in the sense that much of how we come to understand this musical genre has been through entertainment, but that embedded in this narrative and discussion about one's traumas, one's agitations, one's hurdles in life is the opportunity for healing. And so the invitation really for those who are looking into this issue and reading Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues is to explore our educational systems not as locations for punishment, but as locations for healing. And so that is why I anchored it in this narrative. Now, I think the benefit is that it draws upon a sort of cultural practice and engagement that does have meaning. Even if we don't necessarily listen to the blues, we often in our popular culture explore styles of communication and modes of inquiry, if you will, that are based upon practices of the blues. Rock and roll, what we understand as pop, you know, many of the musical traditions in funk and R&B come from this practice of the blues. But other folks who have been disproportionately impacted by harm also engage in a truth-telling that is anchored in musical form and in physical dance form. And so it is important, I think, to engage that as a way of knowing and a way of healing.
We know that, and your book, earlier book, made that very strong case of how Black kids and girls, but also boys, are criminalized. It feels like, you know, at least once a month we hear a story of a 7, 8, 9-year-old kid being handcuffed by a cop in their school because they were acting out, whereas you just almost never hear that about white kids because white kids are actually treated as children. So let's talk about just grounding your work in this idea that children are unique beings. They're vulnerable. Their psychology is unique. People go to school for years to understand child psychology. Traumas felt in childhood follow us throughout our adult life. How important was it, did you find, through your research and writing this new book, to make that case that children and the understanding that Black and brown, these small beings, are actually children is so important?
It's foundational, really, to my work to reclaim the childhood narrative in association with Black and brown girls. Emergent research has demonstrated, particularly from the Georgetown Center on Poverty and Inequality, that Black girls especially experience an adultification that impacts them when they're as young as 5 years old, which means that adults are seeing the behavior of Black girls as more adult-like than their white peers. This is something that peaks when they're between the ages of 10 and 14, and it means that we're seeing them as less worthy of protection, less in need of comfort, that they're believed to know more about adult subjects such as sex than their white counterparts. And all of this can play a role in how we respond to them, how much patience we have with them when they make an adolescent mistake, you know, how much we feel that we need to cut them some slack in some ways and give them an opportunity for restructuring and redevelopment as opposed to just treating them as if they're disposable. A central argument in Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues, and in Push Out is that our children are not disposable. And that once we examine what the core issues are, that there are a host of strategies that can better respond to those core issues to improve not just their behavior in schools, but their academic outcomes.
Did you write this book for educators in general, who of course are the direct contacts for children? And if this was your main audience, how did you tackle the fact that unfortunately, it's often the teacher's biases and educators' policies that do the harm in the first place?
This book was primarily written with educators in mind, but also anyone really who interacts with Black and brown girls on a regular basis. If that person is in your family or if that person is in your community, you know, I think there are lessons in it that can be applied. The important thing I would say, you know, about ways that we respond to girls, so I wrote the book as if it is an album, sort of in the tradition of the blues. And so it has tracks instead of chapters, and it has interludes. And those interludes are provided by women who work very closely with Black and Brown girls around the country, which I think is an added benefit. It's a direct excerpt from conversations that I've had with those women about how we respond to our girls. What's critical about
Are they generally Black and Brown women?
They are, yeah. One of the women profiled is an Asian American woman, but they're all women of color who have come to this work to engage, you know, our Black and Brown girls, and who understand what it takes to, you know, fully respond and build out a continuum of robust resources for their development. Critical to that is also understanding this issue of trauma. Not just the trauma that we measure, although I think that's important, the trauma that we measure through survey tools such as the ACE study, the Adverse Childhood Experiences study that has been popularized by Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris, but also understanding what historical traumas do to set the conditions for safety in our schools as they impact Black and Brown girls. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that to me has been, you know, an important part of this narrative, a missing part of the narrative. But that there are organizations and schools that are doing some innovative work to begin to address these issues that impact our girls.
I want to pick up on the word that you just said, safety. Safety is so critical. And often we're talking about girls whose communities don't feel safe, and then coming into schools where they are over-policed primarily because they are dehumanized or criminalized, turns those spaces into spaces that feel unsafe to them as well. I mean, through a white lens, policing is supposed to help bring safety, but through a non-white and particularly a Black lens, police's presence means danger, you know? And so how does safety form a basis for improving educational outcomes?
Yeah, I personally want us to radically shift our understanding of safety and how we bring it into our learning spaces. And it's something that I began challenging overtly in Push Out, and that I pick up on in Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues. Safety in my mind, and in the minds of the girls that I speak with, is really something that is that you co-construct with young people. It's not something that you implement. So if we approach safety from the standpoint of, let's try to build out a climate that includes the input of those that we're seeking to sort of create this safe space for, then it requires us to have conversations with them about what they need to be comforted, what they need to feel nurtured, what they need to feel physically out of harm's way. In almost all circumstances, you know, that is not associated and directly tied to law enforcement, but rather with the skill sets that really are assigned and, you know, applied by those who are positive youth behavioral specialists and people who understand what it takes to build relationships with young people. You can't bring about safety by bringing in instruments of surveillance. That was a critical argument in Push Out. In Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues, the argument is that safety does not require a police escort, but rather it requires us to engage in a direct confrontation and healing practice in association with the traumas that cause harm in the first place. If we know that hurt people, then what we try to do is mitigate the harm and reduce the hurt, not come in and punish, which creates greater harms in the community, but also in the classroom.
And of course, this becomes relevant when we talk about mass shootings in schools where police are brought in as a solution to that without any regard to how that police presence impacts the students of color. So let's talk about, can you give me some examples of the kinds of programs that either you saw or would like to see where conditions are created for Black and Brown girls to thrive?
So the one thing I'll say, just picking up on the comment you last made, was that, you know, it is important for educational institutions to have relationships with law enforcement agencies that are doing police work in communities. What is challenging is that those institutions have not been given the right kinds of training and engagement and have the trust of the community to respond to young people who are engaged in normal adolescent behaviors, largely for those who are acting out in association with a disruption or trauma in their lives. So the programs that I have seen that have done a great job include innovative spaces where the impact emphasis of the programming is on the repair of the relationship between those girls who have experienced this kind of harm, who have experienced suspensions and expulsions, and repair that relationship with school so that they can reemerge as scholars in that space and trust that they can be in community, in communities that are learning. One school that I talk about both in Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues and in my TED Talk that I recently gave on this topic is the Columbus City Prep School for Girls. They're also featured in the documentary film Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools, which we have touring the country now and which will air on PBS in the future. But this school has taken on a radical approach to how they engage with young people and girls in particular. And as a result, their rates of bullying have reduced, their infractions associated with insubordination have been reduced. They have, you know, eliminated out-of-school suspensions for these offenses. Their bullying rates have gone down simply
by
doing a few things.
Reducing punishment, they were actually able to better address
exactly.
the problems. Wow.
Exactly. So what they did is the principal, I met the principal when I was touring for Push Out, and she came and she stood up in the community meeting and she said, "We're no longer going to punish girls for having a bad attitude."
And so she said this in response to your books?
She did. So we were in this community and she said that, and instantly she caught my attention and we developed a relationship from there. And what she did is she established in her school that every student would have an adult that they could go to as a safe person on campus. They start their morning with group meetings where they're able to explore goal setting and, you know, really coming together as a community. They have restorative practices. They use their in-school suspension time or the spaces where girls may come and need an opportunity to regroup. They use advocacy and engagement as an opportunity to bring girls in closer when they've made a mistake. So even if it's an in-school suspension that they are engaging, they use that time not to lose any instructional time. The principal checks all of the instructional work that is happening or the academic work that is happening, but they also have set up classrooms and spaces where girls can take deep breaths, can engage in mindfulness, can reconnect with themselves and then their community. And that's an important distinction because a lot of times people, when they think about removing kids from class or if young people self-select to step out of class to get themselves together before coming back in, it still is accompanied with a loss of instruction time, which is a critical piece. At this school, they have not lost instruction time because they emphasize the idea that if you need to step out of a classroom, you're stepping out of community with the expectation that you will return to that community able to engage. And once you engage back with that community, you need to be right where you left off and hopefully where the class is right now. And so they really do build out this energy that is about young people being able to fully explore what has upset them so that they can repair it and return back to the community whole. And their numbers are just incredible. We chronicle them in the Push Out documentary, but they're one of the best examples of leadership that has stepped in to say, I don't want to see these outcomes anymore for the institution that I am leading. And so let me partner with my faculty, let me partner with my staff, let me partner with the girls to engage in a conversation about how we will build out new outcomes that produce the best positive or the best possible academic outcomes for our community. And they've done just that.
Wow. So just the influence of your earlier book, Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools, had an impact on this one school to change its policy and actually showed stunning success. You're able to profile it in your new book, Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues. Finally, I'm wondering, Monique, if the broader Societal framework is something that needs to be addressed as well, because although, as we said, you know, when we talk about safety, not only do children, unfortunately, feel children of color feel unsafe in schools that are over-policed, they feel unsafe in their communities as well. Schools are chronically underfunded. Black and brown dominated schools are more underfunded. Do we need, as we talk about creating conditions where Black and brown girls can serve, can thrive, do we need to also address that broader societal framework within which our educational system is based?
Oh, definitely, definitely. You know, we constantly start the conversation by saying we know that schools are underfunded and that the resource disparities are, you know, partly to blame for the practice disparities that we you know, experience and see. But many of the things that I talk about and ways that we approach young people are about setting an intention using the resources that we have. If you have a teacher and a student, you can start to engage some of the practices that I profile in Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues. Some of these interventions require no money. They require us to think differently about the promise of Black and brown girls and a different reading of their behaviors when something is upset. And that is, you know, the primary call to action here. Absolutely, we want to see better resources. We want to see counselors in schools. We want to see a host of interventions when young people are facing a crisis that can support their well-being. And much of that does have to do with the resources that are associated with some of the things that you just described. But at the end of the day, when we have a classroom and we have the opportunity for learning, we've got to make sure that our young people have an equal opportunity. That, to me, is the fundamental piece here around educational equity and educational justice for our girls. And then, yes, we continue to advocate to ensure that they have the best possible resources in the form of books and a clean classroom and an environment that will support them feeling that they are loved and sacred in our communities and not disposable or afterthoughts. You know, once we, you know, get other communities well situated.
Right. Those things matter. Just feeling that
they do.
That those resources are available matter to self-esteem. Monica,
right.
Where can people find out more about your work as well as the documentary based on your earlier book, Push Out?
Yes, we have. So you can always find my work at MoniqueWMorris.me. You can also chronicle and follow the screenings that are taking place in communities and get more information about a broadcast schedule for the documentary, which is based on Push Out and Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues, at pushoutfilm.com or follow us on social media at pushoutfilm.
And we'll link to all of those from our website later today. Monique, good
luck
to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
My guest has been Monique Morris. We've been discussing her latest book, Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues, Education for the Liberation of Black and Brown Girls. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.